Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
What ended up happening over several years, I developed a very severe drug addiction and internet pornography addiction that almost killed me. And as a result of those addictions, they got progressive and worse. And, you know, I started going on these drug benders that would last 2, 3, 4 days. I would disappear in hotel rooms and I would resurface several days later, where business colleagues and family and friends were, you know, deathly worried about my well-being, and it got really, really scary and really ugly.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is a really, really good one for a lot of our listeners, and that is loving an addict or alcoholic, how to help them and help yourself. With the president and founder of Veritas Solutions, a company which provides corporate training and support for employees struggling with mental health and addiction issues, Stephen Walt. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So our guest today, Stephen's personal journey with substance use and mental health disorders, as well as his recovery from them, were the impetus for him to create Veritas. After having struggled for years in silence due to the ongoing shame around addiction and mental health, then having to navigate the coordination of his own treatment and care, including the difficulties of returning to the workplace, it became obvious to him that additional resources were needed to help companies deal with these issues. For over 20 years, Stephen has been a leader in the employee benefits and insurance industries, having represented large corporations, law firms, accounting firms, and hospitals providing executive benefits. Stephen designed Veritas with the vision that his corporate training, employee education, and intensive care management will be part of benefit packages offered to corporate America. And Stephen is very generously coming on the show today to share some of his personal story and some great insights. So we're really happy to have him here today. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Big fan of both of your podcasts.
Thank you.
And thank you from me as well, Stephen. I am fortunate enough to be a personal friend of yours. And I really was always so impressed with your commitment, not only to your own health and wellness, but also how honest you are about it with people, and very open and authentic about the struggles that you've had. And I think I was personally drawn to your authenticity and just how much you've overcome and have done it successfully. I have said for so many years that I call the three deadly sins of marriage the three A's, which are abuse, addiction, and adultery. They are the killers of relationships a lot of times, because any one of those three undermines the integrity and the trust of a relationship. So speaking about addiction today is probably a long time coming for us. We probably should have done a show like this a long time ago, honestly. But I'm really, really excited to have you especially here talking about this today because, you know, you're a guy, number one, and guys don't generally tend to be open. They don't generally want to talk about the struggles that they've had. They want to put on this brave face that they're strong and they can handle everything. And of course, guys, just like women, we're all human beings. So I'm really, really looking forward to having you share your personal journey with us. So if you could take us back, tell us what were the struggles that you had and what was your personal journey that led you to where we are today?
Awesome. Great. And thank you guys for having me. And you know, one thing before we get started, Rebecca, I love being your friend, and it's always very safe to talk to you. I always feel like there's no judgment in when I share things with you, and I think that's a great quality. So I very much appreciate that.
Thank you
for having me out there. So, you know, one of the things that I thought it would be interesting to talk about on this podcast is the truth. And more often than not, the truth is scary to share. And, you know, for me, I've struggled with a bunch of different types of addictions over my life. And, you know, my story is such that, you know, I grew up pretty normal. And, you know, I didn't have my first drink or drug till I got to college. I was a kind of scholar athlete type of person in high school. And, you know, drinking or drugs was kind of taboo to me. So I was a late bloomer, per se. And a lot of times you hear people struggles with alcoholism or drug addiction start much early on. And, you know, that wasn't the case for me. But the one thing that I can relate to when I was growing up was just being so uncomfortable in my own skin. You know, even before I got to it, picking up a drink or a drug or some type of behavior, just how brutally uncomfortable I was with who I was. And even as a good athlete, even as a good student, just socially uncomfortable, feeling very different. So I could always look back at that period of time, and even before I picked up, I knew there were issues. And you know, when I got to college and you know, I had a lot of fun in college. I drank and started doing drugs in college. And in hindsight, with really no real regret, other than I didn't use college for what it was intended for, like studying and learning, which was unfortunate. But, you know, I had a lot of fun in college with partying and had some good friends. And, you know, when I got out of college and I got into the workplace, you know, my first real drug of choice was work and making money. I had gotten out of college and didn't really take college seriously and was kind of limited as to what I could actually do. And, you know, I went into financial services, I went into sales, and it was so critically important for me in my 20s because I was so brutally uncomfortable with myself that I had to make money. And I had to be successful as a way of just coping with these really painful feelings of who I was. And I was successful, you know, in my 20s. I was a weekend warrior. Yeah, I would, you know, be able to party, drink, do drugs on a Saturday night, but I always made it to work on Monday. And I worked extremely hard in my 20s to be successful. And I did.
When you're talking about that, does the Brené Brown hustle for your worthiness?
Oh my God! Oh yeah. I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown, and I've read a few books in my life, but that where the words literally jumped off the page about perfectionism and with shame, and the armor that I started to build around myself with my career to really hide the truth of how I felt about myself. And it worked until it stopped working. And, you know, I got through my 20s and, you know, relatively fine from a drug or substance abuse perspective. You know, but in my early 30s, there was a bunch of things that happened. In no particular order, I started making a lot of money. And for someone like myself who was just dealing with a lot of these really deep emotional issues, making a lot of money was like putting lighter fluid on a fire. I just wasn't in a position to handle it because the outside world was telling me one thing about me, but yet inside I felt so differently. And I never forget this, you know, really when things got kicked off badly, I moved into an apartment in Manhattan on 44th Street, and it was on the 32nd floor. And I just had this feeling that I had arrived, right? This beautiful apartment, and looked downtown at the UN and the beautiful skyline of New York. And it's this incredible feeling. But what I also found out when I moved in there was that the doormen in this building around the clock sold cocaine. And for the first time in my life, I had access to cocaine. And, you know, throughout my 20s, I was someone who would do drugs, that someone would have drugs around, and really never had access to it, never had a drug dealer that I would use. So it was kind of limited. But when I moved into this building and now have access to cocaine, it became a huge issue. And the second thing, and I'm dating myself, was I got the internet in my apartment. And for the first time in my life, I had access to pornography. And the combination of the two turned out to be lethal. And what ended up happening over several years, I developed a very severe drug addiction and internet pornography addiction that almost killed me. And as a result of those addictions, they got progressive and worse. And, you know, I started going on these drug benders that would last 2, 3, 4 days. I would disappear in hotel rooms and I would resurface several days later, where business colleagues and family and friends were, you know, deathly worried about my well-being. And it got really, really scary and really ugly. And it got really progressive. And I ended up having to walk away from my business in New York and losing the business, and ended up going to a bunch of different treatment facilities. And, you know, for many years, I struggled even going into treatment facilities and any type of therapy. I'd go to the best treatment places that money could buy all over the nation. But I had this other little secret that I wasn't sharing. And that was this whole other pornography and sex and love issues that I was struggling with. So it was this, it was so brutally uncomfortable for me to talk about these issues, even in therapy, even in a treatment program. And I struggled for many years, even after I went in to try to get help, because these were issues I just was not comfortable talking about. I had so much shame around it. One might say I had this kind of Catholic guilt. You know, I grew up very Catholic, and my ideas around sex and sexuality were kind of very strict. But yet I was engaging in these behaviors that, I couldn't make any sense of why I was doing it. And it was extremely painful. It just led to brutal isolation. The idea of living in sexual fantasy to deal with emotions and feelings that I just couldn't handle. You know, I went years without dating and being in a relationship and engaging in any form of healthy sexuality. And it just spiraled out of control. And it became a place of real desperation and loneliness, because I was out there getting what I thought was the best type of quality and care out there to get better, but yet things got worse.
We're going to take a quick break right now to tell you about our newest sponsor, the co-parenting app Fair. If that sounds familiar, we interviewed Michael Daniels, the creator of Fair, on episode 123, The Insider Secret to Seamless Co-Parenting. And Rebecca and I are very strong supporters of Fair because we think it supplies you with the best tools to improve communication with your co-parent. They have a time-sharing calendar, documentable text messaging, and an expense tracker to keep track of those shared expenses.
There's a GPS check-in that's court verifiable, a monthly parenting report to download with all your details, private journal to take notes, a file vault to keep your records, photos, and documents, and it's all downloadable in a convenient time and date stamp PDF when you need documentation for legal matters. And there's even a Spanish version as well. Fair allows you to experience co-parenting a totally new way, simply, inexpensively, transparently, and fairly. Lose the he said, she said, and be the best parent you can be. Be fair. Subscribe at BeFair, BeFayr.com, and then download FAYR from the App Store or Google Play. Just go to Fair.com for more details.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on Part 1 of Loving an Addict or Alcoholic, How to Help Them and Yourself, with expert Stephen Wolt.
For years, I thought this was a choice, that I was making these choices to live like this, to act like this. And as a result of that, it fueled me with such shame. And shame is toxic. Shame is toxic in recovering from any type of addiction. Shame is brutal if you want to really experience joy in your life. And shame makes it really difficult to feel worthy enough to be in meaningful, loving relationship.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including how to create a winning parenting plan and still keep peace with your ex.
Yeah, really, your parenting plan sets up your roadmap for how you're going to live going forward. And the more issues that you deal with and contemplate and talk about ahead of time, the more that you have a default plan in place, means there's less conflict. There's less you have to talk about with your co-parent in the future that you may not agree about because you've already put something in place that is there.
And now we return to today's show.
And I never forget the first time there was a book I read called Out of the Shadows by Patrick Carnes. And Patrick Carnes is kind of the creator of some of these pornographic and sexual and love addiction programs. And I remember reading that book for the first time and starting to cry because there was a name to what I was dealing with. And this wasn't about me morally being a bad person, right? That I had a problem, it had a name, and there was help out there. And that was a real turning point in my life. And I ended up working with Patrick Carnes. He had a place down in Mississippi that dealt with, you know, sex and love addiction and pornography addiction and childhood trauma. And that was really the turning point in my life, where there was a road out. And, you know, it was an extraordinarily painful and difficult journey for me, for my family, that I don't wish upon anyone. But I find myself today in a situation where I get to use those really painful stories and life experiences for the good. And being able to work with others and help others, and now being able to kind of bring some of these experiences into corporate America to help companies and their executives, employees who are struggling with these issues as well. So, yeah, that's kind of the journey.
That's really quite a journey. I have to say, it hits me right here. I'm tapping on my chest because, you know, you use words like isolation and loneliness and desperation and despair. And, you know, I know those are all so tied up in the journey of an addict. So your ability to share that and be so vulnerable is, you know, something that I truly commend and thank you for that vulnerability to come on our show and share that with our listeners.
Totally.
Really, thank you. Because I think that, you know, that is going to be something that people will be able to understand and hear. And hopefully the people who are not the addicts can hear that as well, because something that I think exists so much today in the world we live in is that stigma around mental health and addiction issues. And people do not realize just how desperate a journey and how lonely and difficult a journey addiction is. So your sharing that, I hope, is heard on both sides of that fence. There are a lot of myths around addiction. And so can you talk a little bit about the myth of just that addiction is a sort of a character failing or a, you know, something that is a choice, and maybe some of the other myths around addiction?
Sure. It's interesting because for years, I thought this was a choice, that I was making these choices to live like this, to act like this. And as a result of that, it fueled me with such shame. And shame is toxic. Shame is toxic in recovering from any type of addiction. Shame is brutal if you want to really experience joy in your life. And shame makes it really difficult to feel worthy enough to be in meaningful, loving relationships. So, you know, part of my journey was, in fact, that realized that this wasn't a choice, that I was suffering from a disease. And just that kind of shift to know that there's a name for what I have and what I'm struggling with. And I have all the willpower in the world. I mean, I can work 80 hours a week. I can discipline myself to do so many things. But when it came to these addictions, I was completely powerless. So, you know, in my own journey to that point where I started to believe that this was not my fit. Now, it doesn't mean to discount the actions I was taking to hurt others, right? I was completely accountable to that. But to realize that I was sick, and that there's help out there, is really a first step in getting better. I would also think that, you know, we have this idea in this country in particular that an addict or an alcoholic has to want to get help in order for this recovery and treatment to be successful. And when people share about that in 12-step meetings about hitting bottom, or you read about it, I understand where they're coming from. But the truth of the matter is that the three top reasons that people start getting treatment is A, they were court mandated, B, their family forced them to, or three, their employer forced them to get help or else they were going to lose their job. So in all three of those top reasons why people start to reach treatment, someone else had leverage over them. And I think it's really important, and even my own journey, I was A, in denial. I was so scared that I would go to any length to protect the truth. And I think it's just so important to realize that as a loved one, an addict is not in a position to make good decisions for themselves. So if you have an opportunity to use leverage to start the process, even if someone is combative, I'm all about go for it, right? Any way that you can get someone to start the process is good. So that would be another myth that I think is worth talking about. And the other thing that's interesting to me is that we believe in this country that if we treat addiction like you've been in a car accident, not like you have diabetes, right? So we have this idea that someone can leave the home, leave their work, go away for a period of time, and then re-enter their lives and be cured, be better, and live happily ever after. And the truth of the matter is that's inherently false. We have a healthcare system that is designed to provide treatment like that, and it produces poor results. So addiction, these are chronic conditions that need to be managed over time. So I think that's the other thing that for anybody listening to this show is that, you know, these are diseases that have to be managed over time. And an addict like myself is a pretty sick individual. And there's a lot of work that needs to happen on an ongoing basis to get better. And then lastly, I think the other thing, not all treatment is the same. And depending on what, you know, even my own experience, right? I would go to the best places that this country had to offer, these Malibu fancy treatment centers. And the truth of the matter was that that was not the right place for me. I had other things going on, and it took a while for me to find the right type of treatment based on what I was dealing with. So not all treatments the same. I think relying on the right people and professionals to get you to the right type of treatment is critically important when you're starting the journey.
This is all such good stuff. Susan and I actually just decided that we're going to make this into a two-part episode. because this is just such critical, vital information, and I think we'll hit home with so many, and there's just enough information here to keep going. So I don't want to cut you off, so I want to make sure that we're able to get everything in that we can get in. And you do have a really great event coming up, and I want to make sure that you have time to talk about that too. So let me just talk to you about people who are in a relationship with somebody who may have a problem. A lot of times you see them enabling and making excuses themselves for the person. Well, they only drink on nights and weekends. Well, they're still able to work. You know, things like that. And there may be a number of reasons that they're making excuses for them. But what are some of the red flags that people should be looking for that says, you know, this isn't just that they're a social drinker or, you know, even a social drug user, that this person actually has a problem?
You know, it's interesting because on Saturday night, when I should have been watching the Hurricane game with you, Rebecca, I got a phone call from a friend of mine whose spouse was just kind of talking about whether this person is, you know, he was doing cocaine socially. And as much as one can do cocaine socially, how ridiculous is that in and of itself? But really wanted to know is, have we reached a place where this is a problem? And you know, some of the things I think about is, you know, are they missing work? Are they doing things throughout the day, doing drugs throughout the day? You know, and this is a very progressive disease. So some of the red flags would start to be a lack of accountability. Some of the red flags would be, you know, catching someone in lies. Where were they? What were they doing? I think also first of all, it's very scary and it's very difficult. And I know even with my own journey, the loved ones around me were just so confused as to why I was doing this. You know, very early in the process, you're successful professionally. You've got so much going for you. What are you doing? And the answer was, I had no clue. So as a loved one, that are absolutely red flags and signs to say to where this is now shifting from into a dangerous area. And you can go online. There are tests out there. There are resources out there that can help not only the addict, but the loved ones as to whether this has progressed to a place where we need to seek out some help.
This concludes part one of this episode. Please be sure to tune in to part two. In that episode, Stephen will talk about red flags to look for and also what you can do in the immediate term to start helping you and your loved one right away. Also, be sure to check out Veritas Solutions for more information on their upcoming live event in Los Angeles on September 17th. You can find that at Veritas Solutions, VERITUSSolutions.com. Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.